That's you, that is.
Hiya, and welcome to episode 17 of the Tea Party Podcast, which takes you back to when the team of the 90s had the best fanzine in the country. I'm serious about that team of the 90s, you know. I make the point to anyone who'll listen. Remember how Palace were considered to be the team of the 80s? This was before the 80s actually started, and they clearly weren't. It was Liverpool, but let that pass. Well, who were the team of the 90s, do you reckon? Most people, when you ask them, would probably say United or, I don't know, maybe Arsenal. But it was us, obviously. Think about what happened to Transformers from a laughingstock to a team that by the end of the decade were holding their own with the elite of the English game, and in doing so, had a decade of virtually constant success. Yeah, I'm making it my mission to get County accepted within football as the team of the 90s. It'll be difficult, but no reason not to try. Anyway, I believe we're now back in line with episode numbers corresponding to issue numbers. Phew. I'm Dave Espley, who produced and edited the magazine from issue 6 to the end, and what we're doing here is reviewing one issue per episode. So as we've sorted out the numbering, we're talking today about issue 17. A couple of admin things from the last issue. As Dave Long kindly pointed out, I stated ridiculously that the Forest away game was first, and as Leo's amazing spreadsheet clearly shows, the Edgeley Park game was first. Apologies. Dave also said that he thought the Eddie cartoon in the editorial was meant to be Eddie from Bottom, rather than Eddie the Eagle. Yeah, so anyway, on to issue 17 and the cover. Not entirely sure what the as seen on TV refers to. It might become clearer as we leaf through, but media whores that we appeared regularly on telly, radio and the press. And to be fair, fanzines were the first choice for telly and radio in the 90s, wanting a fan's comment on whatever was happening in football. The joke's one of Bill Edge's cartoons and refers to the promotion that the club ran, whereby 200 women were allowed in for free for a game. Well-meaning, of course, but possibly slightly patronising. We've got a fair few female County fans who've been going for years. And when's International Men's Day, eh? Aside, it's 19th of November. On to the editorial, and we make reference to the club beginning to hassle fanzine sellers outside Edgeley Park. When you think back, though, it was a really shitty trick to try and prevent the fanzine from being sold. There were clearly some very thin-skinned people at the club who weren't averse to using pretty dodgy tactics to stifle criticism, as we'll also see around Manstock time. We've got a new variation of the funny space fillers under the editorial. TTP is not the official match programme. It is not our intention to solicit sales from people who intended buying the official programme. Therefore, if you bought TTP thinking it was the official programme, you're a pretty sad case, aren't you? Every seller clearly shouts fanzines. Not programmes, not Mayfair, not come and demonstrate your stupidity to all and sundry, but fanzines. Go and see if you can spot one and they'll give you your money back. You can see that really annoyed me, can't you? Anyway, after saying last time that I wasn't sure we did any more of the classic MEN match reports, we have one in the very next issue. Yeah, like I couldn't have just picked it up from the pile next to me and checked. This one's from the home win over Palace in 1973, which came a year after we'd won at Selhurst Park to set up the home game with West Ham. We also won this 1-0, and I'm happy to say I saw this one in person. My first ever game was a 0-0 with Crewe the previous season, the next game after the West Ham win. The main feature of this report was the fact that Palace were managed by massively overrated fedora-wearing Burke Malcolm Allison. I'll read you a couple of extracts. Lucky Palace by Matt Darcy. County should have scored six. League Cup second round, October 9th, 1973. Stockport County's public humiliation of Crystal Palace may have driven a wedge between Malcolm Allison and his players that could prove impossible to remove. As County celebrated their 1-0 victory, a scoreline that hardly does justice to their domination of the game, Allison slipped away from Edgeley Park, admitting he was, quotes, angry, embarrassed and disgusted by the performance of his team. Just as Palace were humiliated on the pitch by County, they were also humiliated off the field by their manager, who walked out of their dressing room at half-time because he was afraid his anger would cause irreparable damage to their confidence. He spent the half-time interval signing autographs in the director's box. After winning in the same round of the same competition by the same score at Selhurst Park, last night's goal scorer Ray Charter cockily claimed, "We only beat them to prove it was no fluke last year." Without question, this brave and hard-working 4th Division side could have, should have, scored six goals before the referee's final whistle brought jubilant fans onto the field to shoulder off Alan Ugly and to chant for manager Brian Doyle. Ugly didn't really merit such treatment. He only had one save to make when he came out to block Don Rogers' only surging run. County, on the other hand, had shots by Harry Kirk and Tommy Spratt fingertipped over the bar. They scored after only 18 minutes when one fullback, Les Ormrod, ran the ball along the edge of the penalty area for the other fullback, Charter, to spin and hammer a great shot past Paul Hammond. The goal not only meant defeat for Palace, but it also forced Alisson into a long conversation with the Palace director after the match and caused him to leave the ground long before his disconsolate players boarded the team bus without him. Weird to think that the game was almost 50 years ago, and yet less than 20 years prior to this reprint in the fanzine. Bloody hell. Anyway, on that depressing thought, let's turn the page to the Stop by Excess, which makes reference to the grief we were getting from the club. At this stage, we were still happy to joke about it, despite events having taken a more worrying turn, as we'll come to later. County in Fan Mag Bangag by our football correspondent. The fanzine publishing world was rocked to its foundations yesterday as the government, in conjunction with Stockport County FC, extended its broadcasting ban to cover the printed word. The ban, which was announced at the Tory party conference on Tuesday, is understood to cover any organisation which dares to give football fans an independent voice and takes the form of a total restriction of reporting of statements from their spokespersons. County fans were shocked by news of the ban when we approached them last night. Arthur Cooper, 69, an unemployed skip emptier from Heverley, said, "Fanzine? What the fuck are you talking about? Stick your fucking notepad up your arse, you bastard." Other fans were more forthcoming. Casper Humperdinck, 36, from Edgeley, said, "I think they should be allowed to sell. After all, it's a free country, isn't it? Personally, I don't buy the thing. I much prefer to spend money on a programme which only has about 5 pages that are worth reading. Ha ha, ship ahoy, flubble wubble wubble." We approached ashen-faced editor Dave Espley at his Offerton home late last night to get his reaction. He said, and there's a blank space, "Under the terms of the ban, we are not allowed to report his words. However, unemployed actor Alan Rothwell took time off from his taxi driving to speak the editor's words. This is ridiculous. Are there no lengths to which the club won't go in order to gag us? Is the fact that the fans all want TTP to stay of no consequence?" Contemporary reference explanation. The government had banned Sinn Féin spokesmen from being broadcast on telly, leading to the bizarre situation where they were filmed giving interviews, but their voices were spoken by actors. Yeah, the country was mad back then too. And second contemporary reference explanation, Alan Rothwell, he's the guy at the end of the Alan Partridge film who was stuck in the room at the end of the pier with a load of oldsters, he used to be on Curry, you'd know him, had apparently been driving taxis of late, the Express had reported, in order to earn a crust. Bit mean to draw attention to it maybe, but funny as well. You might remember the day today also taking the mickey out of the broadcast ban. Not saying that we can be considered in any way the equal of the day today, of course. That's for others to say.
Sinn Féin have so far denied they are backing the campaign. Earlier today I spoke to their deputy leader, Rory O'Connor, who under broadcasting restrictions must inhale helium to subtract credibility from his statements.
So what's your initial statement?
These incidents are inevitable given the position of the British government.
You do support this campaign, then?
The IRA have been forced into this position.
So you do support this campaign of violence?
The IRA... Sinn Féin is a legitimate political party.
Which supports terrorist action.
Your tone is antagonistic and you're making me very angry.
And since we conducted that interview, all sides in the conflict have had a meeting and have sorted everything out.
Slight digression now to talk about the games we sold the issue at. The start of this sale included the back end of a horrendous run, including the two Forest defeats. We went 7 games without winning, the last two of which were a 0-0 at home to Blackpool, where I think this issue might have debuted, and a 0-1 away defeat at Bournemouth. We then bounced back with 2 wins in 5 days, a 5-0 at home to Huddersfield, with 2 each for Priest and Francis, and another from Ward, then 3-0 at home to Preston, with Francis and Priest scoring again, and Chris Beaumont also getting one. We then had another long south coast trip to Brighton, and another defeat, 2-0, before a first-round FA Cup win at York, 3-1, with 2 goals from Big Kev and a rare strike from Lee Todd. I don't have the contemporary positions to hand, but I can only assume we dropped away a bit after this, as it was still fairly early in the season when a run of wins or defeats can mean big movement in the table. However, we were about to embark on a run of 6 wins in 7 games, albeit 3 of them being cup games, which would have put us well back into contention, somewhere we stayed until the end of this season.
The Tea Party Podcast. It's rubbish.
Back to the fanzine then, and we had more about the famous half-time game at Morecambe. I've been called by Des Hinks, who told me more about the game, which I paraphrased as follows. Apparently the size of the county following had been seriously underestimated, with the result that about 500 county fans were policed, if that's the right word for such an inadequate performance, by Longcopper and his dog. The match was a half-time match at Morecambe in 1990, and we'd mentioned it in the previous issue. At half-time in the real match, the impromptu kickabout got underway, and soon became almost as serious as the real thing. As the stewards attempted vainly to clear the pitch, one man and his dog decided it was time to round up some troublemakers. Trouble was, the two teams contesting the game were so big that the copper could only chase small groups of fans at any one time, while the game continued around them. As soon as the dog's attention turned to another group, the previous chasees rejoined the game. The dog was getting more and more frantic, as indeed was the copper, as they realised they were fighting a losing battle. Then it happened. One fan, a member of the group being chased at the time, unfortunately lost his footing and fell to the floor. Rover, seizing his chance with both paws, pounced and sunk its teeth into the posterior of the poor unfortunate before recommencing the chasing with another small group. The bitten fan, his pride undoubtedly hurt, as well as his rear end, got to his feet, calmly dusted himself down, trotted to where the dog was currently chasing and booted it firmly up the arse as hard as he could. Exit Rover pitched left, yelping. The copper, realising he was seriously outnumbered without his injured canine pal, beat a hasty retreat, and the game continued. Even the pinching of one ball by a steward didn't halt proceedings, as the game merely continued with the other ball, only stopping when County and Morecambe emerged for the second half. The real game ended 1-1, with Lee Todd apparently scoring County's goal. History doesn't record who scored the County's fans' goal in the half-time game. About 10 minutes into the second half, the cavalry arrived in the form of lots of coppers, who seemed to have arrived expecting a riot. All they found was a rather boring pre-season friendly and a police dog with a sore bum. We then have more foresight from Rob Bezick, who believes that the solution to the issue of shite refereeing, he's on about Peterborough at Wembley again folks, is a fourth official. Admittedly, Rob's fourth official would actually be another on-pitch ref rather than a guy whose job it is to hold up the subs board and be shouted out by managers, but still, ahead of the game are we, or what? The next article, by me, was one which explained how the stuff that we'd hinted at in earlier issues, the club trying to stop us selling outside Edgeley Park, had blown up into something pretty unpleasant. I'd forgotten that I'd actually tackled Elwood in person about this, but as the article says, that's how strongly I felt about it. I think it's fair to say that we were close to giving up, and it was only the intervention of a United supporting souvenir vendor that saved our bacon, of which more in later episodes. I said in the article, we couldn't give you the full story in TTP 16 as, negotiations were at a difficult stage, but now all can be revealed. Started with the first sale of issue 14 for the home Coca-Cola Cup match with Chester. We got moved on by the police at the Cheadle end after a county employee who should remain nameless came out of the club to complain about our selling. I think it was Dave Coxon. Sorry, I said he would remain nameless, didn't I? The coppers, employing tact, a word you'll find in all good dictionaries, county, asked the lads selling at the Cheadle end to move 20 or 30 yards down the street, which they did. This wasn't good enough for this person, however, who then complained again, with the result that at the whole game we were told we couldn't sell anywhere around the ground. To their credit, the police told us that they were acting reluctantly. They would much rather turn a blind eye to our selling. Admittedly illegal on Harcastle Road. Incidentally, this is me in the modern day saying, just bear that in mind, as they did all last season. However, once someone complains, they have to act. They did say, however, that if county would rescind their complaint, we could return to the situation we had last year. Oh, well, good you'd think, but it isn't actually illegal, as we'll come to later, and the police really should have known the law. Anyway, we went to the inaugural county club meeting on Monday the 14th of September, Starman and me, knowing that Elwood would be in attendance and we could approach him with a view to working out a compromise. We started by saying that we were there amicably and wanted to reach an agreed solution. He told us that he didn't mind the fanzine and didn't mind criticism, but that some of the stuff we printed last year was not on. The cartoon about Steve Bellis was cited, as was the Mr. Men of Countyland. I got him to admit then that part of the reason for the objection to the police was not the commercial aspect at all, but the content. This from a man who had just admitted he didn't mind criticism. We were still attempting to reach a compromise, however, so we let it pass. We then mentioned sponsoring things as soon as the bank loan was paid off, and I think it's fair to say at this point he began to take a serious interest. We gave him a copy of issue 15, he hadn't seen any of this year's, and parted amicably. He'd said he'd speak to Mr. D. Coxon, the chief executive, and see what they could sort out. Brackets. Question. Why does a club chairman have to clear a decision with the chief executive? No, I don't know either. On the Wednesday, the 16th, I attempted to ring county to get a response as we were going to press on the Thursday and I needed to know. Coxon was unavailable, so I rang City Estates in Sheffield and asked to speak to Elwood. He wasn't in, so I left my name and phone number, both work and home, and asked him to contact me. On the Thursday, I rang county and managed to get a hold of Coxon at the third attempt. I started with an amicable air, but his position was unchanged, and what I considered to be his aggressive attitude meant the conversation degenerated into a slangy match. I remember that, actually. He was a real git, to be honest, in that conversation, and I think ended up saying, well, bollocks to you, we're going to sell from the front garden of someone on Hardcastle Road, so we'd end up selling a lot closer to the ground than we were doing so anyway. And I did actually look into that. You know, we were going to slip somebody a tenner and just say, can we stand in your front garden and sell literally outside the Cheadle End turnstiles? Don't think he was too impressed with me when I said that. So anyway, I hung up on him and attempted to ring Elwood at City Estates again, and again, and again. I tried 7 times over the next 2 days, brackets I counted, leaving name, number and message each time. He didn't ring back. I therefore wrote to him, giving 1 copy of the letter to Steve Bellis and asking him to hand it to Elwood personally at Chester, and sending 1 copy to City Estates. To date, October the 10th, he hasn't replied to either phone calls or letter, and we've sadly assumed he's not going to. So I then had a map pointing out the streets, which for some reason were not included in the street trading laws that we looked up, but they were well away from the ground, and it would have meant that the fanzine would probably have gone under, because we just wouldn't have sold as many copies as we needed to remain viable from those particular points. So yeah, I ended by saying that a final message to those who might think we're too critical of a chairman under whom we've had a great deal of success. And I know a lot of fans thought of that at the time, and still do, to be fair. How would you have reacted to the above? The club behaved ever so reasonably, don't you think? The new board have worked wonders in the last couple of years, and no one's denying that. However, the way they've treated us stinks. Yeah, I'm still angry about that. Anyway, moving on. Alan Hawes then references the infamous Finney Jones video, Ask Your Dad, before Spike gives us the next 5 letters of his A to Z. K is for Kenny. Kenny Fogarty, one of the most underrated players ever to appear for County. Will tackle anything that moved, and he's probably still doing it. And he went to our school. Can't say fairer than that. L is for Lee. Stuart Lee. A free from Wrexham. Sold to Man City on the same day they signed Steve Daly. Shame they didn't realise who was the real footballer and who was the bench warmer. Stuart scored some brilliant goals for County and formed a great partnership with Les Brad. M is for Max Wall. Yes, after years of being the butt of Variety Hall jokes, County were reduced to employing one of the Variety Hall greats, the all-singing, all-dancing Jimmy Melia. N is for Newport. A sobering thought that a team that had played in European competition and had players like John Aldridge and Tommy Tynan banging goals in for fun are now in a position that County were very close to on numerous occasions in the bad old days. O is for Osher. Someone at work said, County's got a new winger for tonight. He used to play for United. Might be alright. He'd call Williams or something. That night's big game was Crystal Palace in the Cup. The kick-off, and Osher immediately nutmegs England full-back Kenny Sampson and whips in a superb cross. A star is born. Thanks, Osher. Fond memories indeed. There's a Bill Edge cartoon followed by an article from Ian Bennett about supporting County from a distance in pre-internet days. It's weird that he mentioned pre-internet days and no one knew what the internet was in 1992. I'm joking, of course, but it does give you a vivid picture of the bad old days before Twitter allowed you to call strangers
In case you haven't been paying attention, here's everything you need to know about the Tea Party.
It's rubbish!
Do you wish you wouldn't keep doing that?
Paul Stock then gives us his views on referees, before we have a Starman quiz and a little jokey filler. And Spike and Ian Bennett give us their views on various matters. Our inside correspondent, Doing Time, then has one of his regular pieces, this time a piece of whimsy concerning a fictional escape to Burnley. I think I should say something about doing time. I wasn't initially sure his stuff was legit when it first arrived, but it soon became clear, both through the stuff we published and non-published correspondence, and one or two conversations I had at the ground, that he was indeed in prison, and for a fairly major crime, hence Dartmoor. I suppose some people might question why we'd print stuff from someone in that position, but I'm glad we did, to be honest. It was pretty clear that he was being rehabilitated. He transferred to HMP Grendon during the fanzine's run. And as someone who strongly believes that prison should be for rehabilitation rather than simply punishment, I was happy for the fanzine to act as a very small part of that. I'll say no more, because people involved are still around and some may even be listening to this. So after a couple more fillers, we then got a tale from Sheriff about how he managed to blag a Wembley ticket for the Stoke game thanks to helping steward a coach. Counting people off and on, essentially, it seemed. He ends by saying, hopefully it won't be another 109 years before we go back to Wembley and the whole town goes county crazy again. Ironic that it was less than 1 year, but we'll come to that in due course. A filler then makes mention of the Arthur Gate, which is something else we'll come to in due course, before we have some drawings that a couple of fans had sent in, complete with rude sign language headline I was quite proud of that I'd drawn myself. If you've got the issue, have a look and see what you think. Matt Cochran, one of the founding members of TTP, then had an advert for a 60s county shirt that he'd sourced and had made, and we're into the letters. Various topics covered, including a request for help with an academic dissertation. We used to receive and print these regularly, but I don't know how many people responded, or indeed whether the final marks were improved as a result. Sheriff tells us some rumours before Duckingfield Hatter sends us a clipping from When Saturday Comes about former player Jim Fryett becoming a croupier in Vegas. Sadly, I lost the clipping, so in the space where it would have been printed is an apology from me. I'm pretty sure the clipping referred to Jim Fryett becoming a croupier in Vegas, though. The Harry Hardy Appreciation Society then makes the case for Alan Finlay, before friend of the podcast Richard Singleton makes the case that players who want away don't always find the grass is greener away from Danny Bergara, which is a fair point, of course. A couple of other little extracts. Scott the Woodley Hatter says, with reference to a letter in issue 16 of TTP by a tosser called John Hudson, harsh, in the PS of his letter he says, when will someone have a go at Kevin Francis for his mistakes? Who is this pillock? So Big Kev isn't the most elegant player in the world, but he scores, which is what a striker is supposed to do, isn't it? And he defends as well. So, Mr. Hudson, you don't cheer and jump about when Kev scores, you hypocrite. Then we've got Nooney from Nottingham. Just writing to say how much I enjoyed your fanzine and the game the other night. I've collected fanzines from about 45 different clubs, and along with Newcastle's Half Magpie, Half Biscuit, I'd rate County's the best. Keep taking the piss out of Man United as nobody except their own fans gives a flying fuck about their club. All the best for the rest of the season, and if County don't swap places with the Wankers who shag sheep come next May, I'll show my arse in Mersey Square. And then I put an editorial comment. Current speculation here at TTP Towers is that the last sentence refers to Notts County, but we'll stand corrected if necessary. And were we corrected? It clearly refers to Derby County, not Notts. Lord Lucan then adds, dear TTP, time was, one could look forward to visiting Edgeley Park for an hour or two of quiet reflection and a little solitude. Pick a quiet spot on the terrace and simply enjoy one's own company. Perhaps glance up from time to time to observe men playing football, the association version, on the green. Suddenly this idyllic calm was shattered by the arrival of that Bergara Johnny as park keeper, encouraging noisy crowds with their talk of cup finals and their queues for pies. So yet another sleepy English backwater enjoyed by the few who knew of its existence has been destroyed forever. Therefore I must inform you that I have had enough. I'm off to Old Trafford for some peace. Norman Conquest then cynically writes, dear Mike Yarwood, a few words just to let you know how your favourite team are getting along. Things have changed a bit since your last visit. Vic Bernard isn't chairman anymore for a start. The Cheedland doesn't not only have any seats, it hasn't got a roof either. The back of the pop side is rather nearer the pitch than you may remember, and the railway sleepers have gone as well. And if that isn't enough, the paddock in front of the main stand no longer offers the same superb view of players' ankles as before. How are things with you? We don't see so much of you on the telly these days, but no one should forget your loyalty to County. As Honorary Vice President, you never missed an opportunity to mention us on your show. All those great gags. And who could forget when, during our darkest hour, you were asked if you would do a benefit performance and you unhesitatingly agreed, quotes, in principle. You certainly didn't have to. A simple no chance would have done. It's a shame that now County are going so well, you are more or less bottom of the showbiz 4th Division. But you can always be sure of a warm welcome up here. See if you can't find your old scarf, bob out and rattle for the Stoke game. See you behind the railway end goal. See you soon, Norman Conquest. And we'd added, perhaps County could agree, quotes, in principle, to play a Mike Yarwood benefit match.
Sin.
So that's 11 pages of letters, which had to have been the most at that point. I made reference to it with the "that's more than enough bloody letters" Ed. It might have seemed a lot, but of course the letters pages carried on growing until they regularly took over a quarter of the magazine, which was great. We then got a Starman crossword and a filler moan from me and Bennett. Why does the Matchday Review, or programme as we call it, insist on putting everything in quotation marks? It's not necessary. You use them when you want to quote somebody as saying something. There's no need to put "here is your chance to sponsor a goal, etc." in quotation marks. Think of the printing costs you'd save, County. You could pass them on to fans with a 20p reduction in the cover price. We then got a piece from me bemoaning England's squad selection under Graham Taylor. I remember getting a polite disagreement from a Leeds fan I worked with regarding my opinion of David Batty, which was, "Do we really have to state why he shouldn't be in an England team? The man is complete crap. He can run around like a blue-arse fly and get stuck in. Big deal. If you want people who can run around a lot, why not pick Peter Elliott? Ask your dad. I'm sure he can look after himself as well if needs be. He certainly does on the track. Football ability? Well, he can't have less than Batty. I can't believe the English game is so bereft of decent midfielders that Batty's the best we've got. Franey's miles better than him." I think the Leeds fan disagreed with me. You won't be surprised to hear. I also wasn't a fan of Tony Adams, clearly. Tony bloody Adams. If Batty's complete and utter shite, then Adams could be fairly described as not being quite as good. Anyone who thinks the Eeyore chants that are routinely directed at Adams are unfair cannot have seen the first game of the season, when his gifting of goals to Norwich was truly laughable. Everyone in the country can see that Adams is, at best, merely an adequate centre-half. Clumsy, and with an unfortunate ability to only be able to kick the way he's facing. Everyone except Graham Taylor, it seems. Is he being deliberately contrary in picking Adams in order to show who's boss? I think it's probably fair to say Tony Adams improved in his later career. We then have a short piece about the change of nickname, this time bemoaning the loss of the County Cobras nickname we'd been so desperate to reject when we started just over a year earlier. Get it? Ha ha ha. The jettisoning of the County Cobras nickname wasn't because the nickname was unbelievably bad and actually pathetically embarrassing, by the way. It was because Robbies had come on board as sponsors. After a few anagrams from Phil Dooley in a Bill Edge cartoon, we've got an article from Mike Cochrane, which takes the problems we've been having about selling TTP outside Edgeley Park and runs with it, extending the argument to encompass reasons why clubs should have fanzines in the first place, referencing effective fanzine-led campaigns at West Ham, United, Fulham and Arsenal. West Ham. The board introduced a ridiculous bond scheme which involved the payment of large amounts of money on a monthly basis to watch a football match. West Ham's fanzines got together to protest. Numerous half-time pitch invasions cost the directors large fines, followed by a half-time walkout by a few thousand at the end of last season. Result, the board are now, quotes, reviewing the bond policy. United. Martin Edwards, playing on the fans' loyalty, put up prices 100% to keep up his income whilst the Stretford End was being redeveloped. United's fanzines were at the forefront of the campaign to reduce prices. Result, Edwards and co. rethought their policy. Away fans are now admitted, paddock standing is £8, and although still not an ideal situation, if the fanzines backed by the fans had done nothing, then Edwards would have got away with another pricing abomination. Fulham. Cabra Estates organised a move along with the directors to Chelsea. 1F in Fulham provided the focus for the opposition and coupled with a bit of luck, i.e. Cabra in financial difficulty, the move has been effectively stopped. Arsenal. Arsenal, trying to cash in on their recent success on the pitch, tried to reward themselves and their bank manager by redeveloping the clock end at the supporters' expense. Now, we all don't mind bearing a bit of extra expense for better facilities, players, etc. Again, the board misjudged the mood and instead of lying down, the fanzines led the campaign against the bond. Although the take-up was initially good, once the campaign got going, applications for the bond became few and far between. Indeed, David Dean became so worried that the board of directors issued writs to the fanzines to stop. By this time, though, it was too late. The bond scheme was scuppered and the board left with a load of unsold seats and a big building bill. And finally, we end with details of away trips to Bournemouth and Brighton, at least one of which is a club traditionally no larger than County, but look at them now, and details of how to send in contributions via floppy disk. Ask your dad. Hilariously, we even specified the size of the floppies as 5.25-inch floppies were still a thing in those days. And yes, grow up. And there we have it. Adverts on the back page again, as they would be until we finished, and the 44-page issue 17 is done. Let me know what you think of these podcasts, whether you're enjoying them, anything you'd like me to feature, or just your views about the fanzine years, on or off the pitch. You can email ttptowers@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @ttptowers or @DaveEspley. We're also on Facebook, search for the Tea Party, obviously, although I'm a bit behind with the scanned issues there. See you next time! Time.
Oh,